Paddy Power are streaming all UK and Irish racing on our app. No bet required. Just log in and watch. Terms and conditions apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
Hello there and welcome along to this Monday Racing Postcast. I'm Maddie Plell this week. Got some great guests joined by Keith Melrose, Graham Rodway and Paul Binfield from Paddy Power this week. We're going to have a look back on ARC weekend, of course. That's coming up first of all. There was also Group 1 action at Newmarket with the Sun Chariot. And then we've got plenty to look forward to. Group 1 action also on this coming weekend with the Future Champions Day at Newmarket, the Dewhurst, Cesarewitch, the two big races there. And also, I think we're getting a bit in the mood of the jump season now the ARC's out of the way. So hopefully we can pick some horses to follow from our panel as well. So stick with us throughout. First off, though, let's start off with the highlight then. It is the Qatar Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe, and it was won by Sottas. It wasn't the dream result that we were all hoping for with Enable in her bid for a historic third ARC. She was sixth, Stradivarius, the popular stayer, was in seventh, and it went to the French horse who ran so well in the race last year. I've got a feeling we're going to think this is quite an unsatisfactory race to start off with because the pace was rather muddling and it was a bit of a sprint finish. I mean, Keith, you're often very good on the timing side of things. Do you think that's true? Are we right to assume that?
I actually haven't looked at the time because I have done the same as most people. I've assumed it was steadily run. I saw Giro did the sectionals actually on the Racing Post site last night and they tell you the story of what happened. Everybody knew turning in how slow it had been. And this, it was actually the penultimate furlong that was the fastest. I think it's all flat that straight at Longchamp, give or take. And it was the penultimate furlong where they all really quickened up. And then, you know, they were still going faster than average pace through the final furlong, but weren't going quite as fast as he had from 400 to 200 metres. Yeah, it was an unsatisfactory race. Sottas is well equipped to quicken up like that. He'd won the Prix de Jockey Club last year with a similar sort of idea. You know, it was well run for a French race, that, but it was still a race where his turn of foot came into it. It did again on Sunday, and it was what won him it, really, because the second was In Swoop was beaten by a neck, plainly just slower.
Don't remind
horse.
Me.
Well, yeah, we know all about that one, Maddie, but just too slow, really, for an arc that's run like that. We saw Rabaha, who didn't get the easiest run through, staying on for fifth. And, you know, Persian King was on the front. I thought he got the best ride in the race, actually, Persian King. And I thought, turning in, I thought he might win this, but he plainly didn't stay even with the emphasis on speed. So that, I think that tells you everything that you need to know about the race. It was a muddling arc, and it was a below-standard arc anyway. So Sottas has been, you know, the beneficiary of circumstance, but he's finished on the race last year. It's not a Norton's coin, you know. It's Flincher or Humesey in getting their day in the sun more than anything else, and that's what it was this year.
And if you had to take one horse out of the race, would it be the filly Rabaha, do you think?
As I've written on the post site today, the one horse I'd take out of the race didn't run. It was Mogul. He beat the second and the fourth comprehensively in the Grand Prix de Paris on good ground, admittedly. But it looked like that day he was just starting to become the horse he'd always been cracked up to be. And, you know, at the time, the bare form was low and that was legitimate at the time. But on the back of what happened yesterday, you've got to upgrade that Grand Prix de Paris form. RPRs did it by £8, which is an awful lot. And Mogul now is as good as just about anything in that division. And, you know, I can't imagine Sottas will race on next year. Enable won't. There's a lot up for grabs in that middle distance division next year. And assuming Mogul stays in training, I think he needs to be considered for a lot of these big prizes. And I think you can back him at 33s for next year's ARC.
Mm. Yeah, so you think that's a bit of value then?
Absolutely.
Let's talk about, I mean, we've not even touched on the big story of the whole race, really, and that's the contaminated feed that saw Aidan and Joseph O'Brien withdraw all their runners at the weekend. It was a big loss for the races. Often, you know, in the juvenile races especially, that sort of removed a key player in a couple of those editions. G-Rod, I mean, that's just a really sorry incident for all concerned, isn't it? But I suppose, as they said, for the integrity of racing, it was a move that they needed to take.
Yeah, I mean, it was just disappointing, wasn't it? I mean, the whole thing for me was just a huge disappointment. From the moment that Love was withdrawn, then obviously all the Ballydoyle horses being withdrawn, then the race being run at a silly pace, then there was loads of trouble, a couple of furlongs out, big sprint to the finish, and even possible, you can argue that the wrong horse won, because I think that the second horse in Swoop certainly would have given him more to think about if he'd been a better position throughout. And it just, for me, was an unsatisfactory race, not just because Enable was beaten. Obviously, that was a huge disappointment as well, but it just would have been such a much better race had those Ballydoyle horses been able to take their chance, because they would have ensured a decent pace in that race, because there's no way that all those Sons of Galileos would have wanted to be in sprinting for home. They always stay. So, just from start to finish, from the start of the week to the end of the race, I just thought the whole thing was disappointing.
I think a lot of people will share that view. And an interesting point, too, you make about pace, because John Gosden nominated that as one of the reasons for Enable's performance. It's intriguing, isn't it? Is she going to have another race now? Well, they've not totally discounted it, because it wasn't much of a race, was it? She sort of sprinted and wheel spun on the ground. So maybe we'll see her in the Breeders' Cup Turf. Who knows?
What do they have to lose with her, Maddie? To be honest, we already know she's a champion. We already know she's a great horse. They can't. They're not going to be sending her to the breeding sheds till next year anyway. So, but what's she got to lose by having another race? So
might as well go, mightn't they? I absolutely agree with that. I do.
So do I.
It's the opposite of, you know, people say, oh, she doesn't owe anybody anything. Yeah, but she's bred to race and she's a racehorse. She's had four races this year. You could argue none of them have been races. The Eclipse was just a return. The King George was a farce. September Stakes was beneath her. And yesterday was a sprint up a straight. She might as well not come back this year. She should have one more run with her.
Yeah, I think I'll agree with that. Binners, was it a good result for you, the Arc? Sot Sassy was quite well backed on the day, but obviously Enable getting her beaten would have been a positive result for you guys.
Yeah, good afternoon, Maddie. Yeah, we were, you know, it's a hard one when you have such a popular horse as Enable. You know, she was well back. She went off an odds-on chance. As we all know, she got beaten, and Sot Sass was reasonably popular. Jean-Claude Rouget hadn't hidden the fact that she'd improved in her training recently. You could argue that if we had paid out on Enable, the publicity that we would have got from it and the whole sport, and we all wanted her to win, bookies included, and that would arguably have been the best result. But I couldn't agree with you guys more. It would be fantastic for the sport of racing if we could see Enable again. And let's hope John Gosden and his team decide to race her again.
Well, what would happen as well, of course, is you'd have potentially the Love Enable clash we always thought we would get this whole week. I assume it would be in the Breeders' Cup Turf, and I assume that's where Love's going. So, yeah, we might actually get that sort of Sampras Federer handover of power that we thought we were going to get yesterday.
Do you have any betting on that?
I wouldn't bank on it. It wouldn't surprise me, you know, if one of them ends up going for the fillies race and one of them ends up going for the Breeders' Cup Turf. The way this year's gone, we'll probably get robbed of it.
Yeah, every chance, you know. I mean, what, it's 9.5 furlongs that race, isn't it? I don't think that's for either of those fillies, but I've never. You can't overestimate the extent to which people will dock fights these days, I don't think so.
Binners, have you got any prices on that potential clash?
Well, actually, Maddie, we have got the Breeders' Cup Turf priced up, but we haven't got Enable in the betting as yet. I guess our traders are waiting to see what comes out of the discussions amongst John Gosden and Frankie, etc., over the coming week. But Love does head the market of the Breeders' Cup Turf. She's 6-4 favourite, 11-4 Gayoff, 4-1 Sot Sass if he has another go this season, 8-1 Magical, 12 Channel Maker, and it's 14-1 bar, including Mogul and Mishriff.
I might as well put it down now that I'm not sure that race is going to suit Love, you know.
Okay.
Because she's got one pace, really, and these turf tracks in America are the second-class citizens, so they get put on the inside of the dirt track. They're all extremely tight, and Keeneland's no different, so it's going to be a tight, tight mile and a half, and she probably will just be far too good for them, but, you know, tactical element of it could do her, because I
that's
don't
fascinating.
Think, I don't think she suits, she'll suit these American tracks. I certainly don't think it's where she'll put up her best performance. She might still well be good enough to win.
I know we seem to say it about every race, but that has the potential to be the race of the season, doesn't it? And of course, we have Champions Day to come as well. One horse who we'll probably be seeing in America as well is the Prix de l'Opera winner, Tarnawa. And I thought this was a really notable performance under Christophe Soumillon and for Dermot World. Obviously, she won the Vermeil last time. She beat Alpine Star and Ordaya. But I thought she was notable because she was one of only a few horses to really make an impact from off the pace. And who knows, how do you think she would have fared in the Arc, G. Rod? Would you have given Tarnawa a chance?
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got to be thinking the way, was it or whatever that thing was called. I mean, that ran quite well, didn't she, in the Arc, having found a bit of trouble and came home quite nicely. And, yeah, it was a bit of a frustrating race for me, that Prix de l'Opera, because I did quite fancy Alpine Star myself, and I thought that she might outstay them. But, yeah, I mean, the way the Arc's panned out... I mean, you wouldn't have put anything past running a big race in it, would you, really? Not certainly not something the class of Tarnawa. That she would have had a chance, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And be fascinating to see how she does get on if she goes to the Breeders' Cup, whether that's for that filly and mares race or elsewhere. Keith, do you agree with me? Do you think there's anything in that coming from off the pace? Because it is harder to make up ground on ground that's that tacky, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and that I don't think that race just by eye. I've not done timings on it, but it looked like it wasn't the most strongly run race you'll ever see either. So I thought she did well to win it. Actually, I think she's very much a mile and a half filly. Her dam stayed a mile and a half. I think mile six actually. She was third in the Curragh Cup. So I think next year there could be a lot of fun to be had with Tarnawa over a mile and a half. The idea that she's going for the mile one and a half race in America is. Bothers me a little. I don't think that'll suit her particularly. And the other thing I was going to ask is about Alpine Star. I was like, Gina and I fancied her quite a bit. I thought a mile two was going to be right for her, but I thought she got outstayed more than anything. Does anybody know what the intention is for her? Is there any chance she might run in the QE2?
I think that would be a good shout. I'm not sure officially on what the line is coming out of the race, but interesting. Seabinners, do you have her in your QE2 market if we give you a minute or two?
First of all, I can tell you that Tarnawa is favourite for the British Champions Fillies and Mare Stakes. We put her in a 5-2 favourite from five immediately after the race. She's out to 3-1, but she's still favourite. But she's also heads the betting for the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf. She's 3-1 favourite for that. Dermot Weld suggested one of those two might be a possibility, or he did also mention the turf as well. So. It's all balls are in the air at the moment, Maddie.
Okay.
It needs to be Ascot, doesn't it?
Yeah. Do you think?
Yeah, she's a mile and a half filly, no question.
I would love to see her in the Hong Kong Vars or the Hong Kong Cup myself. I love that acceleration she showed in the final stages. Do you think she would have run well in the Arc, Keith?
Well, she's run to about 116. She'll be better at she'd have been placed, I think.
Mm.
And she's another one. I looked at the Arc betting this morning and. Not as quite as much of a betting mogul, which is 33s for next year's Arc, and it would need to be as weak as this year's, but it's not out of the question these days. And you know, I thought it was dismissive. It's one of those where you go, I'm not going to actually go as far as to back her, but 33 seems a little bit steep.
Okay, that's interesting. What about the Prix de l'Abbé then? Wooded one for Pierre Charles Boudot. Obviously, he had another Group 1 win in the Foray, which we'll talk about in a minute. This was for trainer Francis-Henri Graffard. One from stall 2, and I think the draw was very key in this year's race. Glass Slippers in 2nd. She was drawn out in 10. Liberty Beach was 3rd. This horse has always promised a great deal. Quite a few of the tipsters fancied him for the Commonwealth Cup earlier on in the year, but he didn't end up running in that race. G. Rob, what was your analysis of the Prix de l'Abbé?
I thought the best horse finished 2nd. Now, you've got to give it to Woody. He'd obviously won the race well, but it was a draw race, wasn't it? I think that Glass Slippers, if you'd switched the draws around, then you probably could switch the first and the second around, which was a shame because it would have made it two winners on the day, wouldn't it? That had come back and won, having won last season. I must admit, I didn't see that Woody performance coming myself, but never quite felt that Glass Slippers was going to get her.
Yeah, I mean, she stayed on really, really dourly, didn't she? She's got a fantastic attitude. I must admit, I thought Glass Slippers was going to win. And I do feel a bit hard done by the draw, but that's just the way these things go. What did you think about those in behind, Keith? I thought Lady in France ran very well. She looked very outpaced, but ran on to finish fourth.
To be honest, I focused a lot on the principles in the Abbey. I thought it was the most fascinating race just about the whole week. The whole weekend, because Wooded was drawn in two and stall one was Archer's Dream and James Fanshawe horse. Every single James Fanshawe horse gets held up. So I saw Boudot immediately once the stalls open. All he had to do was beat Archer's Dream to the rail. It's exactly what he did. I agree with Giro to an extent. I don't think Wooded's really a 5 furlong horse. I think he's a 6 furlong horse. And I was one of the people that fancied him for the Commonwealth Cup. He just went as fast as he could all the way. He does get outpaced, but because the ground was testing and whatever, having that rail, he just stayed on really... I thought it was one of the most canny rides that I saw on Sunday, actually. And I thought a lot of that credit goes to the jockey. Obviously, he had the position to use it, but he used it extremely well and didn't really panic when the horse got outpaced. He knew the horse well enough. And I thought that was the most notable part about the Abbey by quite a way. Although, yeah, I think in the most fair of worlds, Glass Slippers would have won.
I think he's one of the finest jockeys riding at the minute, Pierre-Charles Boudot. I mean, he's absolutely on a different level in France, isn't he?
He always impresses me, definitely.
And we saw it again on One Master, which we'll touch on in just a minute. Maybe a little bit of a sort of quiet race going forward, this Prix de l'Abbé Binners. Glass Slippers, well, she's a 5 furlong specialist, isn't she? So I doubt they'll go to Champions Day with her. What did you think?
Yeah, you might well be right about the trip, Maddie. That's a good point. Kevin Ryan did say afterwards that Glass Slippers is in the champion sprint, and we made the horse 10 from 16 for that. But he thought it might come a bit soon. He was talking about the Breeders' Cup sprint, so it'll be interesting to see whether America is on the horizon.
Wooded got a bye into the Breeders' Cup turf sprint after that win yesterday. Now, that turf sprint in America depends on the track, so I sort of half assumed it was always over 6.5, but it's not. It's because it's only Santa Anita that can do 6.5. It can be as short as 5 or as long as 6.5. It's quite strange.
Really?
It's 5.5 this year. So probably more one for Glass Slippers than Wooded, I'd have said. But I was looking into that race when I saw the result and saw that he gets a sort of win and you're in for that race. It's one of those sort of check your bets on that race every year. I've never really bet on it particularly, so I didn't know. But it's a little bit on the shorter side this year.
I'd worry about Glass Slippers if it did turn up to be typical, you know, fast American ground, though. I think she tends to perform well with that cut, doesn't she?
She has done in the past. I can't think of counter evidence to show that she has it's one of those that's self fulfilling, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean,
the cutter one was on good. Our win in the prep race for the Abbey last year was in good. She's look at her career all the way through. It's one of those things that you hear about and it becomes a self fulfilling prophecy. She won her novice on good to firm. You know, she's not obviously desperate on good to firm ground, so.
I just think it looks visually harder work for her on good ground. I thought she was all out to win at the Curragh, and a lot of that went down to her attitude. But I suppose you are right. We're very quick to pigeonhole these horses, aren't we?
Especially if trainers say they are, you know, especially if, you know, she got campaigned in France because wanted certain things. And, you know, if connections tell you the horse wants softer ground, it's easy to just go along with that received wisdom, but helps to challenge it a lot, I find.
Okay, the Qatar Prix de la Forêt is the final race we're going to talk about from Longchamp. And although Enable didn't manage a hat-trick, One Master did. The first horse to win this race 3 times. Again, Pierre-Charles Boudot on top for William Haggis. She beat Earthlight and Safe Voyage. Obviously, as we mentioned at the top of the show, the O'Brien horses, they weren't in here. But I think the form looks like it has quite a strong look to it. And interesting, William Haggis is a lot of those, we're talking about those Breeders' Cup races, and it could be the mile at Keeneland for One Master next. She was 5th at Churchill Downs in 2018. That was behind Expert Eye, and she's so versatile, isn't she? 6 furlongs, maybe, you know, she ran on Champions Day last year in the sprint, 7 furlongs is her speciality distance, and then also she runs well over a mile as well. And Safe Voyage in behind, he's pretty sort of similar, isn't he, in that he seems to thrive on soft ground, but is also very, very capable on other goings and other distances. Binners, I'll go to you first. One Master. I think this is just a fabulous story and fantastic horse that she's been kept in training this time, and we've got to see her because she really has put up some excellent performances this year.
Yeah, she has, Maddie. And, you know, you spoke about the jockey just a minute ago, Pierre-Charles Boudot. He gave her another brilliant ride. Yeah, she did what Enable couldn't do in the art, winning the race 3 times. So a marvellous achievement by the Suffolk sorcerer, William Haggis. And we initially thought that she might be one for the champion sprint at Ascot. She's got an entry in that, and William did mention that we made her 6-1 from 10-1. But again, like some of the other horses we've talked about, different options. You've mentioned America. William Haggis was also saying she's in the Kiwi too, but I had a look at the entries today, and I don't think she is. So it'll be interesting to see where they go next.
It will, and you'd have to give her a chance wherever she went, wouldn't you, G-Rod?
No.
Superb. That teaches me to ask leading questions.
I think that she is a very, very good horse, but her problem is that she is an absolute out and out 7 furlong horse. That is definitely her best trip. It was funny the other day when we were doing the What a Shout podcast on Friday, where we had Gerald Mossay on, and he was discussing the unique test that Longchamp provides over 7 furlongs, and he was suggesting it's like going down a slide for the first couple of furlongs, he said, and then they really quicken up towards the finish. So it's to the way that he was explaining it suggested that it was quite an easy 7, if you know what I mean, downhill for the early part. Now, obviously, one of her main assets is her speed, and I just don't think that she's quick enough to, although her main asset is speed, I don't think she's quick enough to win a champion sprint over 6 furlongs, and she doesn't stay a mile well enough to win a Group 1 over a mile. 7 furlongs at Longchamp seems to be absolutely perfect for her, as she's shown on her last 3 years winning that race. And I just think it's a shame that there aren't more Group 1 7 furlong races. There must be so many horses down the years that maybe even have gone without winning a Group 1, but should have done, because they didn't have a Group 1 there for them over 7 furlongs. Now, over the jumps, they created loads of Grade 1 races for these intermediate type horses, didn't they? They're, for years and years and years, there was like native upmanships and things like that. Horses that weren't quick enough for 2 miles, didn't stay 3 miles. All of a sudden, over jumps, they created like the Ryanair Chase and all those other Grade 1s over 2.5 miles, perfect for that sort of horse. But yet, we haven't done that on the flat. There's not really that many 7 furlong Group 1 horses, Group 1 races, sorry, for these proper 7 furlong horses on the flat. It's a specialist distance, and I just think it'd be great if there were more of them.
Would you not think it would detract from the 6 furlong and the mile races in One Master's case?
I guess so, but I just don't think One Master could have won either of those anyway. It certainly shouldn't be having the same effect that obviously putting the 2.5 mile chases and all that have had at Cheltenham and that. I mean, that really has ruined some of the top 2 mile and 3 mile races at Cheltenham, hasn't it? But I just think there's also, on the flat, there's a bigger pool of horses for these races too.
Mm. Okay. I know throughout the year we've spoken a lot about those 7 furlong horses, and Earthlight and Safe Voyage, they fall into the same bracket, I suppose, as well. But I did like the way that you put me right there with One Master. Keith, how would you fancy her for the Breeders' Cup Mile? Would you be a fan, or do you think she needs that 7 furlongs, as G-Rod said?
I think that's, you're sort of right, but remember that the difference between 6 furlongs, 7 furlongs and miles far narrower than 2 miles, 2.5, 3. And him and I are going to have words about this in the jump season, but not today. My attitude on that is very much that the last thing the Gold Cup needs is more non-stayers. But in terms of this force, I like her more than Enable. She's my Enable. I love her. She always turns up, always gives her running. She doesn't have, you know, she ran to 118 on RPRs yesterday, and that's her best ever performance. And yet she's won three group ones and been a short head second in the champion sprint. What was it? No, a length second in the champion sprint last year. She's been beaten, you know, in a mile group one as well. She's so adaptable. She can do it on heavy ground. It's, in fact, it's the biggest testament to her is that she can go to this champion sprint over 6F at Ascot or go to the Breeders' Cup mile and you'd take her the same for either, wouldn't you? I'm not saying she'll win either particularly, but, you know, if she was, she will give her running in either of those races. How many horses could you say that about? She's a fantastic horse and such a trier, and all the while, without actually being a superstar, she doesn't have the ability to fall back on. She just gives her high teens running on a remarkably consistent basis. And that's the sort of horse I really, really like. Whenever she goes, you know, I might back against her, I might back her, but I won't be sad if she wins because she's become a real favourite of mine.
Yeah, I think she's a favourite for a lot of people, isn't she? And she's not shirked a lot of battles. As you say, she might not be at her optimum over 6 or a mile, but she runs over it and she runs very, very well.
You struck on the right point there, shirking battles, because the reason Giron's talked about the lack of opportunities for 7 furlong horses. That very fact makes it very hard to shirk battles over 7 furlongs because you've got to go for all the big races. And that's what she sort of does, despite the fact that she can go for a mile if she needs to. You know, she was a length fourth in the Falmouth this year. She can drop back to 6 if it's at Ascot or somewhere that's stiff enough. You know, that's the nature. If you start expanding the 7 furlong programme, which, to be honest, I think they should on balance, that is the runoff you're going to get. You're going to get, you know, one master might decide to avoid Space Blues or something similar. That might avoid Wichita next time. That's what you'll end up getting if you expand that pattern. But I do think horses, and increasingly as horses are bred for speed, there aren't yet the opportunities for a mile and shorter, or certainly shorter than a mile, relative to middle distance races. And I think the pattern committee will have to redress that balance sometime. I think in 10 years' time, we'll be looking at a far deeper pattern for horses like One Master.
Yeah, I agree. And like you say, I think that's the change that's going to be inevitable. I do wonder with One Master how much of her not running at 2 has helped her as well. She's been brought along, you know, she wasn't rushed in the early part of her career. And I wonder if that's what's led her to be such a redoubtable horse now. Who knows?
It's quite interesting as well, Maddie, because I think her dam, like Enticing, I remember her very well. She used to run in the same colours. And she was a really, really good 2-year-old Enticing. So it'll buck the pedigree trend a little bit there as well, One Master.
Yeah, what were you going to add, Keith, before we go?
I was just going to say it was about William Haggis has obviously taken her, I think he did it deliberately. He always saves her, or he always used to, maybe not this year so much, but always used to save her for the autumn a little bit more and the tail end of seasons. And he can do it, he seems to be able to either build them up very slowly, like One Master, like Adabe, but he can also produce some really good 2-year-olds. And, you know, too many trainers, or not too many, but you can understand why they're good at one thing and not another. But he's one of the few that can do it always.
And he proved last year in Australia what success he could have down there when he targets these races. So
good race planning, that. Really good.
Definitely, definitely. And I remember before I went over to Hong Kong, I was talking to him about Young Master. And I think it was even so much as 12 months in advance, he was talking about the next year going to Australia. So he's clearly a trainer that thinks through these things an awful lot, and that's what you need to do, isn't it, when you're talking about international challenges. Let's talk about then Newmarket, because there was another Group 1 this weekend. That came on Saturday, so don't go anywhere.
Paddy Power shops are back open, and with them, the return of a massive racing offer. We're giving best odds guaranteed on singles and multiples. All UK and Irish racing, all shops, all day. Limited time only. Terms and conditions apply. Ask in shops for more details. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
Okay, welcome back to the Monday postcast then. And Ascot was abandoned on Saturday, so we didn't get to see a Logician, last year's St. Ledger winner. It will be the St. Simon Stakes at Newbury, or maybe even the Champion Stakes next for John Gosden's Grey. Really glad that we're seeing him on a race course after serious injury at the start of the year. But as I mentioned before the interval, let's talk about the Kingdom of Bahrain Sun Chariot Stakes at Newmarket. It was won by Nazif for Jim Crowley and John Gosden, who bounced back after a couple of below par efforts over 10 furlongs. This was her second Group 1 after winning the Falmouth earlier on in the season. She beat Half Light and Cloak of Spirits, two fillies who were, well, bigger prices than many of the horses taking part in this race. And that was because Champs Elysees was so unlucky, for my money at least anyway. Run and Peaceful, the favourite for Aidan O'Brien. She was very disappointing as well. Perhaps it was the ground there. But G-Rod, Nazif, are you a fan of this filly?
Yeah, I mean, she's like a bit like One Master, isn't she, really? She just keeps turning up and dancing the dance, and she's very, very tough and game, and she put in another good performance. I don't know, it's just I don't like to be too I don't like to be too anti these sort of fillies races, but just not sure that this is like a true Group One in the real sense of the word. Like, would you fancy Nazif to be taking on the likes of Palace Pier and the others? What's the other one called? Pinatubo and horses like that. I mean, it's a good solid performance, but I think before they expanded the whole fillies pattern and all that, he probably would have been like a solid Group Two performer, just short of the top class. But when it comes to racing against their own sex, she's obviously one of the better ones out there. So I suppose you can call her Group One, but for me, she's on the lower end of the Group One spectrum. For all, she's like a really nice, likeable, tough and genuine filly.
Okay. I must admit, I couldn't have had her beforehand. I was worried about those two defeats, but she'd been freshened up and given a break. But I do think the way this race was run is something that we need to touch on and very interesting. As I say, Keith, I personally thought Champs Elysees emerged with the most credit. She couldn't really get any run and then ended up right out in the middle of the track. I think she's fourth in the end, and she was the horse I thought emerged with the most sort of credibility coming out of the race. Do you think that's fair?
You could put her in front of the second and third, no question. I'm not sure it goes as far as you have there. I think it would have been close between her and Nazif. But yeah, I think obviously you can mark it up on that performance. I think that makes it a better performance than her matron win. So you can take it as the bottom line that this is a filly that's still improving. So that's the way to really look at Champs Elysees. Is, you know, you can toss it over in your mind whether she'd have won or not. She's definitely still improving. I think Gila made an interesting point there about the fillies pattern. They're judged to different standards by the pattern committee, the fillies and mares races. You don't have to run at quite as high a level to qualify as a Group One. And I think it should maybe just be reflected in the title. You know, just say fillies Group One. Just to mark these things out, just to maybe just goad them gently into challenging for the big races. Because Nazif, you're right, hasn't got the form to match up to an open sex Group One performer. But I don't think she ever will because of her racing style. However, she will be very deadly in a lot of these group races for the reason that she's got such a brilliant turn of foot. It has been obvious all the way through this year. It is the one that gets her out of trouble, and in these group races, especially sort of less well-run ones, this one was reasonably well-run, not massively, but you know, it was a fair pace. And you know, when you need to really quicken up in a race, she's the one you want to be on, and I think that will continue through next year if they keep her in training, because obviously this year she's won the Duke of Cambridge, Falmouth, and now the Sun Chariot. I think that's the sort of palmarès on which she'd probably retire a filly, I'd imagine.
Probably. I mean, you mentioned this sort of grading group ones by quality, but if you look at the mile division in recent years, I mean, they haven't been genuine top level group ones, have they, some of them?
The thing is, with the pattern committee, and I think they're right in this one, things get judged on rolling 3-year bases. And yes, you do get some years where the milers are cack. But at the same time, I think the mile division's saved the season, personally. I think they've been the best. And I think the fact they've met each other more often has been a big boon to the curtailed season. So, you know, and while there might be below average years, our mile division isn't going to have, as a number, you're not going to get many mile group ones that are like falling out the bottom of the group one bracket. So I wouldn't see that so much. And the Sun Chariot, to be fair, is holding up to the standards. You know, I think yesterday's or Saturday's race was £1 below standard. So, you know, and you're having to run to 118 to win that. But an open sex group one, 121, you know, the weight for sex allowance plus on top of what you're getting in the Sun Chariot, would be very much a lower end group one. So I would try and find a way to encourage these fillies to take on open sex races. And rather than, you know, just take the easy one. We talk about Enable. How many times in her career did she run on a Yorkshire Oaks when she could have tried something else? So, and she wouldn't even be anything like the worst example. I'd like to see the good fillies run in open sex races more.
It's quite funny because on what she out the other day, I was actually suggesting that they should scrap the fillies allowance in group ones, simply because horses are massively overperforming, particularly in the arc, obviously.
Yeah.
In recent years, but I mean, this would be an example of a horse that would need the fillies allowance to be competitive in the all age, all sex mile group ones. I mean, Nazif would have no chance of beating, you know, Palace Pier and horses like that off level weight. But what I was suggesting was possibly you could say, right, well, you can have the allowance in group ones fillies, but once you've proven that you can beat the colts, then maybe take that allowance away and let them go, then let the fillies go and prove out how, you know, whether they are really top notch or not. But yeah, whether that then, as Keith said, I mean, this isn't something that I thought about, but now that Keith's mentioned it, it's possible. The problem with that then, of course, that might disencourage them from then going for those races and force the trainers back into fillies company just to race against fillies. And we don't really want that as racing fans, do we? As racing fans, we want to see the best horses take on the best.
Yeah, if you scrapped the fillies allowance for 2021, Love would not face a colt.
Yeah,
no,
it's a really interesting debate, isn't it? And one that I'm sure we could spend a lot more time on. But let's move on. We also had, there was a good card at Redcar on Saturday. Lullaby Moon won the T-Royal Trophy there. Astilio won the Guysborough. Any other performances we just want to mention before we have a look at Future Champions Day? I thought Existent, if you haven't seen that performance at Newmarket, he bolted up in the maiden. Could be one to watch for next year. Ninth in the Coventry. Any other horses people want to put up?
Yeah, I mean, the one that caught my eye was that, you know, the big auction race.
Lullaby Moon?
Just Frank, wasn't it?
Ah, okay, sorry, yeah.
That absolutely bolted up, didn't it? Now, the one thing that I was thinking about this race, right, was, is this another example of, you know, just the horse getting free on the front end at Newmarket and making a mockery of the race, you know, because that kind of what happened in the Cambridgeshire last week with that Paul and Oliver Cole trained horse, and there were a few meetings earlier in the year, certainly where once you got on the front, it was very, very difficult to be caught on the Rolling Mile at Newmarket. But if you can take that performance at face value from Just Frank, then it was pretty smart, wasn't it? And, I mean, Les Air wouldn't be the sort of trainer you would be thinking, well, this is a top-class two-year-old coming from Les Airs. I mean, you don't see that very often at all. And I thought that... yeah, he showed plenty of speed. Now, whether the soft ground brought his stamina into play, because he'd raced mainly over 7 furlongs before that, that's another question. But I thought that was quite a good performance from Just Frank. I mean, I'm not saying that he's going to be a Group 1 sprinter next year. I mean, far from it. But he certainly looks like the sort of horse who could make up into a very smart sprint handicapper, that's for sure.
Yeah. What about you, Keith? Anything catch your eye?
I'm afraid not. I mean, I did look, obviously, I watched a lot of Longchamp this weekend. We've touched on the big races. I thought that the Fahey filly probably should have won the Marcel Boussac.
Fevrova.
Yeah, I thought she shaped about as well as anything in that race. But I watched the group ones and whatnot this weekend. And that was the one out of the races we haven't discussed that I thought, and we mentioned that.
Okay. I'm sure we'll have some fancies for the Dewhurst and the Cesarewitch, also the Autumn Stakes and the Darley Stakes this weekend at Newmarket, and also my one of my favourite meetings of the whole season, to be honest. So stay with us and we'll talk about that just after this.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
It's Future Champions Day on Saturday at Newmarket. We're hoping to unearth another Pinatubo in the Group 1 Dewhurst Stakes. And it'd be interesting to see if indeed we get to see Thunder Moon, the current favourite, I believe, given he's trained by Joseph O'Brien and the contaminated feed issues they've had. So fingers crossed that he'll be coming over. As I mentioned before the break, this is Zarich as well on the card. What do you think of the Dewhurst and the two-year-olds we've seen this season? Binners, do you have an updated Dewhurst market for us?
I do, Maddie. Yeah, we can't separate Thunder Moon and Chindit now. We make both of those 5-2 joint favourites. Then we've got Battleground in there at 5, Alcumate at 6, 8-1 Al Bashir, 10-1 Cadillac, and it's 12-1 Bar.
How excited are you by these juveniles in comparison to other recent years, Keith?
I think we've got more to learn about them. Often the Dewhurst favourite would have run 4, 5, 6 times. And not many of these have done that. It's a really interesting, it's going to be a more revealing race than it often is, I suspect, for that sort of reason. I don't think I'll be betting in it yet because I just don't know what's going to run. We've talked about, I don't think the feed issue is going to come in this weekend. My understanding is that the prohibitive substance involved gets out of a horse's system, and that all the O'Brien horses, certainly Aidens, have had their feed changed. So I don't think the feed issue is going to be is going to come up at Newmarket this weekend.
Yet they've tested all the Australian horses. Why would that be then?
I have no idea, to be honest. It's not something I've particularly followed. I found out what I did about the substance, and it's sort of time spent in the system because I'm more interested in the Dewhurst than what's going to happen in Australia in a month's time, frankly. I'll turn up and look at the Melbourne Cup a few days before, sort of thing. That's the level I'm looking at Australia. So I'm more focusing on the Dewhurst because I do think whatever O'Brien decides to send is going to be extremely interesting. You're getting Hot Battleground at 6-1. I'd be very interested at that sort of price. I don't know if he's coming across. St. Mark's Basilica, Mr. Jean-Luc Lagardère on Sunday. I was very sweet on him for that. 14-1 for the Dewhurst in places. That suggests he might not run, but you know, if there's any indication he might, I'd be very, very interested. And Wembley's another one who finished between Thunder Moon and St. Mark's Basilica last time. And another one that's not O'Brien trained, that again, the price tells me that maybe there's not anything going with this race, is Etonian, who's a stablemate of Chindlet, of course, looked extremely good to me when winning the Solario Stakes. And it was not that I'm often swayed by what trainers say, but Hannon did say he thought it was his guineas horse after that, potentially. So that's another one that I'll be thinking that, you know, 14's is suspiciously big, actually, because if he turns up, I would be looking at something, I'd think about half that.
Do you know what? I thought exactly the same, but the vibes were that both Chindit and Etonian were going to go for the race. G-Rod, have you heard anything? What do you think? I mean, these Hannon 2-year-olds, it's brilliant to see him have two real top notches, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, looks like he's got a couple of top notches, does he? The money really has been coming for Chindit all day. I mean, I've been watching the market on this race. It was sort of 4-1 knocking around a bit earlier, but it's down to 5-2 now, I think. So, you know, that would maybe suggest that might be the first string. But like you guys, I was wildly impressed with Etonian at Sandown. I thought he'd picking up really well, and form's not bad. I mean, the winner, the third, Apollo 1, won at Salisbury last week, and the runner-up looks pretty smart as well, I think. It was unlucky in that race. It's a really good Dewhurst as normal. The other one in the race that I'm excited about is 5,000-1. Andrew Baldin's runner. Now, I thought I think when I was on this podcast last time, we were waxing lyrical about how good Alchemate was when when Alchemate won the Mill Reef. But I mean, 5,000 to 1 wasn't beaten that far by him, and he pulled well clear of the third, Rhythm Master. And I just thought 5,000 to 1 shaped like he was in desperate need of further. He shaped like the horse who was going to improve significantly when he went up in trip. And he obviously is going up to 7 furlongs here. And last year, Andrew Balding, he won the Racing Post, well, the old Racing Post, didn't he? The Vertum Futurity now at Newcastle with Cameco, after that had been beaten by that Royal Dornock at Newmarket. So, I mean, this is really, the last couple of seasons, is, I mean, I don't want to be disparaging towards him, but the last couple of seasons, Andrew, the quality of Andrew Balding's horses has really risen, hasn't it? I mean, he's really... is playing at the Group 1 level now, Andrew Borden, the last 2 or 3 seasons. And I think we're just starting maybe to get an idea of how he trains these juveniles, and just the way that Cameco developed as a juvenile last season, from getting beaten by a Royal Dornock to then thrashing the opposition in the Vertum Futuri. It just makes me think that 5,000 to 1 is going to maybe progress along similar lines. I mean, he's got beaten... for me, by a much better horse at Newbury than Royal Dornock, you know, Alchemate. And I think that 5,000 to 1 is going to make a huge step forward in that race as well. So, I mean, there's a couple of big old prices knocking around there. Etonian at 14s and 5,000 to 1 at 14s for the Dewhurst. If both of them turn up, you'll be on, like Keith says, you'll be on horses that are going off probably 6, 7 to 1 on the day. I mean, they really do look big prices, of course. The problem you've got, if you want to go and back them today or tomorrow, is if they don't turn up, you're going to lose your money.
Yeah, it's a conundrum I'm sure we're all familiar with when you're looking at races on a Monday. Cesarewitch, then, can I either pick from each of you for the Cesarewitch? Binners, I'll go to you first. Anything catch your eye? It's an interesting race, isn't it? Because Ocean Wind, of course, he can't run in the race, the Antipost favourite.
Yeah, that was very unlucky for Roger Teal, that... It was a technicality sort of thing, wasn't it, Maddie? Just looking down at the race. Yeah, my fancy for the race is Huey Morrison's Not So Sleepy. He's a 10-1 poker ahead of him in the market. We've got Coltrane at 13-2, then Leon Cavallo at 10s, along with Vidana Blue. But not so sleepy. Was brilliant at Pontefract last time, and he's last month an easy winner. That was over a mile and a half, but ran a brilliant race in this last year, fourth to Stratum, and ran 2-3 on that occasion, only beaten 6 lengths. I think that one will go very well. Still a double-figure price at the moment.
We haven't had him on these shows in a long time, but I know Mr. Siegel, Tom Siegel, will probably agree with you because he absolutely loved Not So Sleepy, didn't he, over the hurdles last year. I'm really excited to see the favourite. I know it's boring, but I tipped him in the Melrose last time and he was so impressive, wasn't he, Coltrane? Excited to see what he can do after a little bit of a break. Hopefully we'll see him run in the race. Gerald, have you got your eye on anything anti-post for this race?
It's not really a race that I like that much, but...
Why is that?
I never ever find the winner of it. Always seem to think that I've found the best handicapped horse in the race, and then they just run appallingly. You know, sometimes in your punting career, you just get a feel for some races and some others you just don't. And this is just one of those races that I just can't seem to get a handle on which sort of horse you need to win it. And I mean, if I were forced to play, I would probably go with Binners as well on Not So Sleepy, just on the simple fact that it's going to be very testing ground. This horse was very good over hurdles last year on testing ground. I remember I was at Ascot the day when he hammered that field from the front around Christmas over hurdles. Like I was saying earlier, there's been a few races this year at Newmarket where they've really struggled to catch these front runners. And even in races like the Cambridge year, like a couple of weeks ago, where you thought, well, they'll and front runners will have no chance and all the hold up, and then, you know, they didn't go mad and the Majestic Dawn just made all. And it wouldn't surprise me if the same happened again. Yeah, if I was forced to play, I'd back Not So Sleepy, but you know, I wouldn't be putting him up with any confidence given my awful record in the race.
You're never forced to play. Never do you have to pick a horse in a race. Remember that. Our responsible gambling, something we all take very, very seriously. But two, maybe one tentative vote for Not So Sleepy then. Keith, I mean, whose side are you on? Would you look for a progressive type like Coltrane or an eight-year-old like Not So Sleepy?
I wasn't terribly encouraged by how freely Coltrane raced when he won the Melrose. You know, it's going to be a lot of getting this trip. I'm actually a third tentative vote for Not So Sleepy. I do. Obviously, he's got that that jumps form. He did come back to the flat with what obviously looks a spin. He gets a penalty for it, but you know he's won by nearly five lengths. He's got more. I think he's going to be £6 well in technically. I noticed as well that there's only 36 in it at this stage, and that the maximum field's 34. So unlike often with these big handicaps, you are basically guaranteed a run. And nothing's going to be more than about £4 out the weights, I don't think, looking at a quick glance. So that's something to consider. That's not something that we need to worry about as anti-post punters. What you do often with the Cesarevic, when you feel like you shouldn't, it is a bit of a draw race, isn't it? It shouldn't be. But those drawn really wide end up having an awful lot to do. And so that's just something to consider there. So I will probably wait until I see the draw, especially given Not So Sleepy will want to be near the front. I'll wait until that before going in, I think.
Okay, and changing tack now, one of my favourite meetings of the whole year, I would probably say, is the Silver Trophy meeting at Chepstow, which starts on Friday. You've got the Persian War, you have that Silver Trophy, some great novice chases. I remember I was really keen on Imperial Aura for that Silver Trophy last year and he finished third. Look at what he did after that. So it's a great race to follow throughout the season. On that note, who are we most looking forward to seeing over jumps this season? Just a name from each of you, if you can. Spinners, I will go to you first. Which horse are you most excited about?
Well, Maddy, I'm glad you brought up the jumps. We're absolutely delighted to be supporting the Paddy Power Gold Cup again at Cheltenham in November. I knew you were going to ask these questions, so I thought I'll ring my good friend Max McNeil and see what he reckons. He'll know more about the jump season than me. He said that the Butcher Said is a possible for the Paddy Power Gold Cup, but maybe handicaps might be later in the year. But his horse to follow for the season is Champagne Super Over, who won a bumper at Ayr last year, was then third in that good bumper at Newbury's Hennessy meeting. When ironically the ground had gone too hard for him, wants soft ground but should be out in the next couple of weeks.
Fabulous. And interesting that you mentioned that Paddy Power Gold Cup, because Imperial Aura, I think that might be where we might see him next. One of my favourite horses from last season. Keith, I know you had trouble narrowing your list down.
I did indeed. When you mentioned this morning, Mary, I had to go and look at my notes and I ended up with, I've got nine down here, but I'll mention three very quickly. I'm delighted, by the way, the Paddy Power have that Gold Cup back. It'll save me wrongly calling it the Paddy Power Gold Cup again, as I have been doing for the last few years.
We've all been guilty of that. Go on then, who have you got?
So my favourite horse that I'm going to back and is going to win a big race is Danny Wisbine, but I think he's going to get aimed at a spring staying handicap, so I won't make it him. I also think the Cavza Nostra is a horse that I've had on my list for a long time, but his form's there for everybody to see. He beat Christmas in April when that horse was up 118, and Lord of Menil when that horse was up 120, and he's only rated 128 now. So while that's exciting, everybody's going to see that form when he first comes out. So the one I'm going to pick is Caribbean Boy, who's only run a couple of times in Britain. It's a Mounir Souairi horse, bought from France. Looked really quite impressive, I thought, when winning at Haydock on his second run last time. Jumps really well, extends really nicely in that testing ground. I would be trying to get a run or two into him and trying to win the December Gold Cup with him.
Fantastic. I remember you telling me about that horse and something to do with the sectionals quite a while ago now. Seems like a different world since COVID.
Very fast finish at Haydock.
There we go. And yourself, G-Rod, before I weigh in with a couple, because I can't resist.
Yeah, I mean, I could have put any number up. But strangely, you know, I was going to say Caribbean Boy as well. So how weird is that?
No.
I'll put another one up. I'm most excited from a sort of bumper to hurdling perspective to see Flinter Sacra.
Looks
very, very good. Obviously, well known that he's, I think, a half brother or a brother to the great Sprinter Sacra. And I think that he travels just as well as him, and he's a big bull of a horse, just like his sibling Sprinter. I mean, he would have to be some horse to go to be as good as him, but he certainly looks a very, very exciting prospect. And the way that, you know, Sprinter Sacra just improved as he went over obstacles, just suggests that maybe Flinter Sacra could do the same. Now, whether he's up to, you know, going on to Grade Ones and Cheltenhams and all that in time, we will see. But he certainly looks like also it's got a massive, massive future ahead of him if they can keep him right. Flinter Sacra.
Fabulous. He looked like an absolute aeroplane at Kempton, didn't he? And like Keith, I've got quite a few, one of which is Fidelio Vallis for Paul Nichols. He won a novice hurdle at Kempton the back end of the year. Really like him. What about Highway 102 for Chris Gordon? He another winner at Kempton just before the Cheltenham Festival. And I'm going to chuck in a few that I think could make good staying chasers as well. New Age Dawning for David Pipe. He's took some time off. And for the same trainer, Capage, one who should be at home in soft ground. So make sure you add those to your tracker. That's all we've got time for today. But if you rate, review and subscribe as usual, let us know who you're excited about seeing for the jump season or you're backing for this weekend at Newmarket. We'll see you soon.
Paddy Power Games has over 250 of your favourites to play online. And we're going to attempt to name them all in this 10-second ad before the T's and C's kick in. There's Blackjack, 18+, bgambleaware.org.